The merger and acquisition trend goes global.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us here in the United States. The French pharmaceutical drug giant Sanofi Aventis says it wants to buy the American drug company Genzyme for more than $18 billion. The French are turning up the pressure for the deal after the Americans rejected a smaller offer earlier this summer. More from Berlin and reporter Kyle James.
Genzyme is the world's largest maker of medicines for genetic diseases, but it's been hit by production problems over the past few years. Still, it's got two potential blockbuster drugs in the pipeline, one for multiple sclerosis, another for cholesterol. And that makes Genzyme a very attractive candidate to Sanofi. For one, big drug makers are increasingly looking towards biotech companies for future growth. And another reason is the French drug maker will soon lose a lot of revenue.
Many pharmaceutical companies are losing their patents on the big blockbusters.
Oliver Rakow is an analyst with Deutsche Bank Research. He says Sanofi is now facing generic competition on two of its best-selling drugs.
Therefore, they need acquisitions often of small innovative companies in order to increase their sales again.
While Sanofi's announcement falls short of a hostile bid, media reports say the company might take its offer directly to shareholders. The recent uptick in mergers and acquisitions is especially acute in the pharmaceutical field. Rakow says companies can't just hire more scientists, but need to join up with firms that have research teams and projects already in place. In Berlin, I'm Kyle James for Marketplace.
Japan's central bank held an emergency meeting today to try and do something about its economy and make the country's currency more competitive. And to make matters worse, China is now publicly criticizing Japanese companies for not paying their Chinese workers enough. Things are getting a little testy between the two, as Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
The back and forth between the two countries is all about resources, natural and human ones. Japan's foreign minister struck first, blaming Beijing for restricting exports of so-called rare earth metals. They're essential for Japan's high-tech industry. He also complained that striking Chinese workers are slowing factories down. China Premier Wen Jiabao shot back, warning Japanese companies that it was high time they give Chinese workers a raise. Japanese car makers Honda and Toyota had to interrupt assembly lines at their plants in China this year to deal with fed-up workers there. International relations expert Huang Dahui says this testy exchange is a symbol of China's growing economic power.
Japan is used to being the strongest country in Asia and has always looked down upon China. But now China is more powerful, and I think it's hard for the Japanese to accept this.
China may have a stronger economy than Japan, but Huang says it's basically quantity over quality. He says China could stand to learn from Japan's more mature economy. Not that it seemed very mature today. A rising yen is terrible news for Japan's export-driven economy. The currency is at a 15-year high against the dollar. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Well, it was Japanese stocks leading the way in world markets today. Nikkei was up about 2%. European markets are mostly higher at the moment as well. Wall Street investors wrapped up last week on a buying spree. The NASDAQ and S&P each gained more than 1.5% on Friday. Same for the Dow, which rocketed past 10,000, up 164 points to close at 10,150. But the boom on Friday didn't overcome losses from the rest of the week. Intel, by the way, is buying a division of the German chipmaker Infineon for $1.4 billion. That deal announced today would bolster Intel's wireless technology business.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com.
Some big cities just have a lot of clout when it comes to doing business. Big corporations, key decision makers, technology, transportation. This month, Foreign Policy magazine rated the 65 biggest global cities. Three of the top 10 are in the United States. New York is number one, along with Chicago and Los Angeles. Five of the cities are in Asia. Christina Larson is contributing editor at Foreign Policy. Welcome to Marketplace.
Good morning, Steve.
What makes a city global?
In order to be a global city, you need to have size, complexity, and diversity. So all of these cities are tied to people, places, and ideas outside of the cities themselves.
Your report highlights a lot of people in the future migrating from rural areas to more urban areas. Why is this happening?
Cities are where people and ideas mix, where innovation and change happen, where the jobs are. And from India to China to just about anywhere in the world, people are drawn to places where there's more opportunity. This isn't a new trend in history. I think what's new now is just how fast it's happening. And also how aware people are of it happening halfway around the world.
I was just mesmerized by this one little nugget that I found from this index, and that New York and London represent just about half, under half, of the global market capitalization. And I thought that was just amazing. Two cities, two super global cities. Why should the West be concerned then about what's happening in China or in India, in these other places?
It's important to remember that while Asian cities are rising, and 5 of the top 10 cities in this year's Global Cities Index are from the Asia-Pacific region, while Asian cities are rising, they're still comparatively poor. I think it's important to point out that economic clout and market capitalization aren't the only measures of global influence. Their new political axes, trade networks, cultural norms, experiments in technology and sustainable living are happening all over the world, including, of course, in the East. And so we have to pay attention. We might even learn something that's worth trying back home.
Christina Larson, contributing editor at Foreign Policy Magazine. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Steve.
And finally, as long as humans have been speaking and communicating, people have been devising ways to shut up annoying family and friends. The Washington Post reports a new trend in blocking annoying people, this time in social networks. Twittlator and Tweet Agora each block frequent annoying tweets. X-Blocker keeps that former flame at bay online. Best part about these new ways of blocking people out of your life, they have no idea you're doing it. You can like them, you just don't have to listen to them. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.